live by the Embiid and die by the Embiid is just as relevant for fantasy GMs as it is for Daryl Morey. Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast, a sports ethos presentation hosted by yours truly, Aaron Brewski, and FSWA Hall of Famer Steve Dr. A. Alexander. Some quick programming notes. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the Los Angeles Lakers, and then on Friday we'll be hashing out the Orlando Magic. I do want to point out that all of these team reviews are being done way more comprehensively for fantasy pass holders, NBA fantasy pass holders, I guess all sport fantasy pass holders as well. You're getting industry best names like Mike Pasador, Keston Paul, Mark Camaro, and more, giving you front office quality work so you can get an edge well before draft season. I highly recommend that if you like winning to do that. One last thing before we bring in the godfather of fantasy hoops. I want you guys to like and subscribe to the show and that whole spiel. If you guys could do that, that helps us give you guys more stuff. That's probably the easiest way to distill it for you guys. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. And when the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with one of our over 150 slots. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, the game starts here. So with that out of the way, let me bring in Steve Alexander. And before we get into the not-so-surprising turbulence of the Philadelphia 76ers season, I want to go with a really high-level question. I think it kind of informs the discussion surrounding this team. Do you think, let me just ask it. Do you think a healthy Joel Embiid with Tyrese Maxey, and let's just sort of magically import a number two or three guy as the proverbial player to be named later, you know, that they find some third piece. Do you think a healthy Joel Embiid can win an NBA championship?
Yes. I just don't think we'll ever see a healthy Joel Embiid. So we'll never know.
Well, that's not fun. Because I really think that's like the question, right? Like your voice went up at the end, by the way, sir. Yes. Was that because we don't think we'll see
Ron
Embiid healthy?
Burgundy?
Yeah, exactly. Do you think, like, is that because you don't think he's ever going to be healthy, or like just basket? Because here's my overall thought. If we don't think he can do it, then what are we doing as Philly? Like, are we just saying, all right, he gives us a pretty good chance, so let's just figure it out or we'll try it? Because if you think it's a no, then it might not be the craziest thing. And I don't know the machinations of all of it, but like starting to pivot the boat and get out of this whole, can Joel Embiid stay healthy question, to me, you got a lot of value that would come back the other way if you decided you wanted to go a different direction with it. But do you think that he's got the talent? Not that, I guess, maybe not just the talent, but like the likelihood to pull it off if he's healthy.
Well, it doesn't really matter what I think. It matters what Philly's management thinks. And I think every year they're faith in Embiid's ability to lead them to a championship fades. Takes a 10% hit probably every year. And now they are also asking themselves, you know, can he ever stay healthy? Because if he can't stay healthy for a whole season, then the rest of it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, that if he can stay healthy, can we win a championship doesn't even matter. If he can't stay healthy. So, but yeah, I mean, I think Philly fans feel like they've invested the whole boat into Joel Embiid and he has not returned a profit for them. And even in years where things are looking good, they don't end up well. He ends up getting hurt. There's other teams that are better than they are. And today's NBA is built around guards and forwards. It's not built around centers. Sure, you've got Jokic, you got Wemby, you got Embiid. But, I mean, you look at Philly's depth chart. Do they really start Kyle Lowry, Kelly Oubre, and Tobias Harris?
There was a Kyle Lowry, Nick Nurse reunion
pretty tough.
The floppiest team in the league added the floppiest player that they could get. It was
pretty tough to win a championship if those are your three starting wings.
Well, and Kelly Oubre played really well, so that's kind of saying something. I just wonder, like, if you're a team that's like the proverbial one piece away, how great would it be to just add Joel Embiid to that mix and just go all in, like give away your firsts, you know, just go for it. Like, and of course there's some massive cap number and massive, you know, pieces that you would have to move. I don't even know if it's possible, but like, I just, watching teams, you know, just kind of like play it out when there's not a very good percentage chance that it's going to work. I'm always like, well, why don't you just rip off the Band-Aid and get some value for this thing while you can? If Joel Embiid's your third best player, you know, maybe that's not putting it correctly, but if you bring him in to an existing structure and, you know, take the pressure off of other players that might be very good but aging or whatever the circumstance might be, I love it. And if you're Philly, you could get a restart on everything. Get out of this business of trying to chase the Joel Embiid injury status question. It's to me, I like it a lot. So Daryl Morey, if you're listening, figure out how to trade Joel Embiid is kind of what I'm getting at. And who knows, maybe that's just terrible advice, but he that we are talking about, Joel Embiid, had the same Joel Embiid season we've seen so many times before. Really good one on the floor, but only lasted 39 games, was good enough for a top 50 nine cat value in 39 games. That's phenomenal. Like, I'm almost wondering if I'm reading that right. 35 points a game, 11 boards, just under six assists, 1.2 steals, 1.7 blocks, 88.3% from the foul line on 11.6 shots, a usage rate of almost 40. That's crazy. Those are just crazy numbers. And Joel Embiid is still in your do not draft club, right?
Yep. And that's the problem, man. He's so good when he plays, but you just can't rely on him to play. And maybe, I mean, if I think Philly fans at this point are like, okay, now we're wasting Maxey. We can trade Embiid and get three really good things back. Like, let's do it. And I think management's scared too, because Embiid could win a championship somewhere else. And they are really, really good when he's playing. But you just don't know, man. And the numbers you just read off, I mean, he's incredible. He's a great three-point shooter, shot blocker, runs the floor. He's sort of like a dream, but it turns into a nightmare every single year because he can't stay healthy.
And how does that even affect a guy like Tyrese Maxey? I mean, Maxey, there were stretches without Embiid where his efficiency slid, but finishing with late second round value in nine cat leagues on the strength of 70 games played. So he wasn't on the floor the entire time. 26 points, six assists, four rebounds, three trays. Great percentages on the type of volume he was shooting. 45% from the field on 20 attempts per game. 86.8% from the foul line on 5.5 attempts per game. So really pushing you in the right direction with the percentages there. But so let's play this out a little bit. Let's say Joel Embiid gets hurt on day one. You know, is that a good thing for Tyrese Maxey, his development? Is he ready to handle I'm the number one guy, you know, type stuff? It feels like he has certain tools that suggest, yeah, but what do you think that looks like in reality if we see another 39-game season out of Joel Embiid?
Well, it's not a good thing for Maxey, because then his center becomes Paul Reed, and that's a totally different ballgame there. There go the assists. I mean, Maxey's already shown that he can carry a pretty heavy load on his shoulders, but he also needs Joel Embiid out there with him. If not, I mean, you look at a supporting cast of Paul Reed, Tobias Harris, Kelly Oubre, and 39-year-old Kyle Lowry, you're not going to win a ton of games, regardless of how good Tyrese Maxey is.
The Kyle Lowry is still playing stuff, still just sticks with me as much as anything with this team. And I even to the extent of when Lowry got added and knowing he was playing a significant role in the playoffs, just wondering, like, what would that do to their psyche? Would they go all the way with the flops? Like, how would, because it borders between competitive and clownish, you know, what these guys do. And when it gets clownish, they get outside of their, you know, aggressive, you know, playmaking mentalities and into this trying to rig the game with fouls, part of the whole Philadelphia Sixers experience. And so I just couldn't take my eyes off that aspect of it. But yeah, supporting cast, major issue. Tobias Harris has been like kicked out of Philadelphia. It feels like 5 straight years or something. And then here he is again, finishing with a top 45 finish in 9 cat formats, just a ho-hum kind of a Tobias Harris year where he was just a good 2 to 3 rounds value for whoever picked him up. Some of the ADP numbers for Tobias were actually quite ridiculous. I think like 90s in some locations for some pretty public leagues. I mean, this sets up kind of well for him. If he survives in Philly, like nobody, you know, Joel Embiid, of course, can make him go away real quick. But if Joel Embiid plays 39 games, I mean, Tobias Harris, is he a guy that you're targeting this upcoming year if all things stay the same in Philly?
No.
Just not enough sizzle?
No. How old is Tobias Harris? Let's see.
Without looking, I'll say 34.
He is. Oh, he's only 31.
Yeah, he's a young guy. Like
he'll be 32 in July.
Okay. See, there's the bias right there. The bias in Tobias. He's not that old, folks.
We put
he's in his prime, Tobias. Man. In Tobias. There's dozens of us. Dozens.
Not in his prime. But, I mean,
yes, of course.
He's such a boring fantasy player, man. Like you said, not enough sizzle. I mean, if I can get a young guy, exciting, explosive player at that pick, I'm taking the kid. But, I mean, Tobias Harris was old Mr. Slow and steady last year. Slow, like he just kept getting it done
chunking
every night.
17-6 is, it's like he's normalized the Tobias Harris stat line. That's not bad. 17-6 and 3. You know, he's get you 3 cash counting stats. You know, that's not bad. Tobias Harris.
It's not.
I honestly, there's going to be a ton of value, I think, in drafting Tobias Harris if everything stays the same as it's currently configured in Philly. But yeah, I get it. And how long can he keep putting up numbers that don't experience some type of a significant dip? Like the percentages for him really do push his value up and you know, losing a little bit there, you know, 10, 15%, handle the decimals as you will. These would be things that would take away the advantage of having him and then with no upside really. So, sorry, listeners, I was trailing away from my mic as my computer decided to flip the page. Buddy Hield, I think, is just an interesting story. 84 games logged, a classic Buddy Hield thing to have happen, whether you're talking about his ability to stay on the floor, also his, you know, like birth certificate issue from however many years back. It's like, how old is Buddy Hield? Is he 50? We don't know. But he comes in and he drops in a top 70 fantasy season out of nowhere. Kind of feels like he's going to possibly be on the go. And that's been the case with him forever. If you see Buddy Hield land on a random Team X, are you going to be excited about the potential to get like a top 75 asset? Or do you just think that that's the kind of the luck involved with Buddy Hield having such high value? Do you think that that's going to run out eventually?
No, I think Buddy Hield in the right situation could be pretty good. He just had a weird season for Philly. He just went on these stretches, like 7 points, 5 points, 9 points, 7 points. Like, man, they're not even using him. Like 23 minutes, 13 minutes. 20 minutes, 14 minutes. So I don't really know what his role was on Philly, because some nights he was really good. He was a different player the first half for them than he was the second half. But I also think a lot of that's the way that they used him.
He was clearly not one of their guys.
Right? Yeah.
Like, they just
not really one of their guys.
And that's always interesting when you see a player who's like not one of the management or coach's guys. That's a clue that if that piece of it changes, then he will be back to kind of old levels of production in a different place. Buddy's just this kind of like happy-go-lucky, talks a lot kind of guy. I wonder if he went into that situation in Philly, and I'm not saying he like talked his way out of anything, but if they just said, you know what, we're playing for a championship, you know, we're going to do things the way that Joel wants things to be done, and we're going to do things the way that this team has done them forever, and we're just not taking a chance on bringing Buddy in here for whatever Buddy's going to do, you know, whether that's defensively or with shot selection, though I don't really see a problem with that, the shot selection. And I think defensively, I don't know that he would be as bad as people would make it out to be. And it was funny that they would go back to him when their backs were against the wall in the playoffs, because of course he can fill it up. And he had a couple moments there before things ultimately went south. Buddy's buddy, I think I would take him if he lands in a good spot for sure. Paul Reed finished with 90 value, top 90 value. It took 82 games to get there. It took a Joel Embiid injury, as discussed ad nauseum, to get there. I thought it was a pretty disappointing season for Paul Reed. I mean, I had him at 75, given the potential for Joel Embiid's injury. I wasn't telling people to draft him there. I was just trying to kind of pin the tail on the donkey with a final finish for him. So it kind of panned out for us a little bit. Just sort of making that prediction, but not really, because Paul Reed sucked all year for the most part. And even when he was good, it wasn't that great. He just gets numbers in the fact that he gets a 0.8 steals and 1.0 blocks in 19 minutes a game. I even thought that was a little disappointing. But where were you when this is a good question, because like old school news people who've followed the news forever, like when you heard Nick Nurse talking up Paul Reed, was your BS meter on high, or where were you at with that?
Oh, I didn't even flinch. I'm like, no, he's still Paul Reed, B-ball Paul. Every time I used him in DFS, he was terrible. It seemed like for the most part, especially early on, oh, Joel Embiid's out tonight. We got all everybody ride, get on the B-ball Paul train. It's going to be awesome. And then he would just be terrible and do nothing. And now, I was never excited about him in the preseason. I was never excited about him even when Joel Embiid went down. Now, I was recommending that people pick him up and see what happens. And I was right there with them. I was also willing to use him in DFS when Joel Embiid was down, but just most of the time it was unbelievably bad. It was just a bunch of nothing, much ado about nothing. Yeah. And I mean, feel like towards the end of the season, he got better, but I am not.
It took a lot.
Paul Reed guy.
Yeah, it took a lot. I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, so, I mean, on one hand, he did great. Top 90 in 19 minutes per game. Bravo. You know, that's really, really good. Congrats. But when you picked him up and the performance was poor, and the fact that he didn't improve in kind of the intangibles game, and, you know, there's kind of questions about how he was deploying himself, like, trying to do a little bit too much on offense, and then, you know, not making the plays on defense that you're supposed to make out as an energy player. None of it happened. He just happened to fall into a decent little fantasy finish here. So I guess going forward, do you think next year, if he gets into a similar opportunity, do you think this clicks for him? Are you optimistic, or are you going to say, hey, let somebody else take the risk?
I guess it depends on what I need. If I need somebody who can score some points, I don't want him. He was what, top 90, top whatever you said, but 7.3 points, 6.0 boards, one block, decent free throw shooter. Of course, he's over 50% from the floor, no turnovers, and almost a steal per game. Yeah, it's okay, but it's just not what I'm looking for. I mean, if I can get him at the very end of my draft, I might take a flyer on him, depending on my needs. But I'm not targeting Paul Reed.
I'm going to do a little potpourri here and just sort of mention some names. De'Anthony Melton, 38 games. It really felt like that back injury was serious, to the point where it might be affecting his talent level going forward. That's unfortunate. We've always, I think the fantasy community at large has just been pretty pro Melton in general. So a disappointing season for him, though. When he was playing, I think he was doing typical De'Anthony Melton stuff, and I think people were pretty good with that. Kelly Oubre somehow gets a minimum deal. Somehow it all pans out for all parties involved. I don't know why it all happened, what the behind-the-scenes stuff was, but maybe perhaps a promise that, hey, you're going to get a lot of minutes here, so take the minimum and just, you know, parlay that into your next deal. Kelly Oubre, 15.4 points, 5 boards, decent little top 120 season in 68 games. Had trouble staying on the floor himself. Lowry, not much to say there. Top 170 finish. Looking at the rest of this list, I don't know that anybody here is rising to the threshold of getting some airtime with this team. Is there anything about these guys as we close out the Philadelphia 76ers that you feel we haven't hit, or just anything that you'll be looking forward to in this upcoming season for them?
Well, I was excited about Kelly Oubre, but at the beginning of the season, they were intent on starting Nick Batum instead of him. And Robert Covington also was expected to get a bunch of playing time, but he was hurt all year. So really, it finally trickled down to Kelly Oubre, and he actually had a pretty fun return to relevancy, I thought. Had a pretty fun season. But, I mean, this team, it's all Tyrese Maxey, who I think I would take him at the end of the second round today. But it's him and it's Joel Embiid, and they're missing a third piece, sort of like the Dallas Mavericks. Philly needs a third option, somebody who can really score on that team. And right now they don't have it. And the big thing is, can Joel Embiid stay healthy next season? And nobody knows. But the answer is probably not.
Daryl Morey, if you're listening, you either got to find that third scorer and pray Joel Embiid stays healthy, or cash in your chips while you can, sir. Tomorrow we're talking the Los Angeles Lakers, and on Friday, we'll be talking about the Orlando Magic. Always fun to cover a smaller market team on the rise. One more time, I'd like to ask you guys to like and subscribe to the show and all that good stuff. And if you're not a premium member, check it out in the next week or so. NFL Draft Guide's getting released, and we're doing a crazy promo that will give you access to not just NFL, but MLB, NBA, B150, the whole bit. So keep an eye out for that in the coming week. Follow us online at Dr. A, D-O-C-K-T-O-R-A, at Aaron Brewski, at Sports Ethos. This has been Fantasy NBA Today, presented by Bet Online, a Sports Ethos presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, be well.